I'm Haley B. Miller, and this is Ohio Politics Explained, a podcast where you give us 15 minutes and we give you all the news you need to sound smart and impress your friends.
Hi, I'm Anthony Shoemaker, filling in for Haley B. Miller this week, and this is Ohio Politics Explained, a podcast where you give us 15 minutes and we give you all the news you need to sound smart about what's going on in Ohio and impress your friends. This episode contains references to suicide. If you or a loved one are in crisis, reach out for help by calling 988. Today, we will discuss the suicide of former Public Utilities Commission of Ohio Chairman Sam Randazzo and its impact on legal cases tied to House Bill 6. We'll also talk about First Energy's $1 million donation to a group supporting Lieutenant Governor John Houston's 2017 run for governor, the latest on the infighting in the Ohio House GOP, President Joe Biden's unexpected challenge to make the Ohio ballot, and Governor DeWine's State of the State address. Joining me this week is USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter Laura Bischoff.
Hey, Anthony.
Laura, it's been a busy week.
It has been. First we had the eclipse and then just a whole fire hose of news, really.
That's right. The eclipse was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it feels like it was a month ago.
Before we start, if you like this podcast, please give us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening. Laura, on Tuesday, you broke the news along with reporter Jesse Baumert about former PUCO Chairman Sam Randazzo's apparent suicide. This comes on the heels of him facing state and federal charges tied to the House Bill 6 scandal. He was the second person tied to the First Energy scandal to commit suicide, Neil Clark being the first back in 2021. What's the latest on this, and what impact could Randazzo's death have on the pending cases?
Yeah, this is very unusual to have two people charged in a case to die by suicide. And it's just, it's a big tragedy for their families and their friends. It's really horrible. It does appear that the state case will continue on. Attorney General Dave Yost brought charges against Randazzo and then former First Energy executives Chuck Jones and Mike Dowling. And he said on Wednesday that he anticipates that the case will continue to move forward. The federal case pending is only against Randazzo, and that was filed back in, I think, in December, and it charged him with 11 counts. And so the cases, the state and the federal cases against Randazzo will likely be dismissed as soon as the death certificate is forwarded to the authorities.
And Randazzo's attorney, Richard Blake, had some not so kind words for Attorney General Yost the other day.
Yeah, he felt like that the Yost and his team really didn't treat his client, Randazzo, Sam Randazzo, very well, and that they put a lot of added pressure on him. I know that Randazzo's team had asked that he be excused from wearing a GPS monitor, and the implication was that it was bad for his mental health. And, you know, I think that suicide is a very complicated decision, and really no one really knows the reasons for it except for the person who carries it out.
Yeah, it's a tragic story here. The other news this week that was also tied to House Bill 6 was the release of First Energy records showing a $1 million donation to a political action committee called Freedom Frontier for John Houston's 2017 run for governor. He later became a lieutenant governor when he joined the ticket with Mike DeWine. So this was before that, during the campaign the year before. What's the impact of this?
Well, that's kind of to be determined. You know, the First Energy records, we obtained these records through a public records request to the Public Utilities Commission. And, you know, just giant stacks of records. And within there was this spreadsheet that included political contributions, and it noted $1 million to Freedom Frontier for Houston campaign. You know, and then Freedom Frontier donated money to another dark money group called Ohio Conservatives for a Change, which backed John Houston for governor back in 17 before he joined Mike DeWine's ticket. So, you know, it raises a lot of questions about why the dark money, why use dark money to support Houston? What was the intent of it? And then, you know, it doesn't look good because John Houston was a strong advocate for First Energy's bailout bill for House Bill 6. In the text messages that came out in the householder trial, it showed that the First Energy executives were kind of relying on John Houston to help press the case for House Bill 6 and try to advocate for more years of subsidies. The subsidies would basically be a fee that everybody, 4.5 million electric customers across the state, would have to pay on their monthly bills. And they, you know, John Houston was in their corner to try to extend those fees for more years. So it, you know, it raises a lot of questions. And we reached out to Lieutenant Governor Houston and got like a written statement back from his spokesman.
Yeah, and it doesn't look good. And you also have kind of the looming race for governor coming up in 2026. Houston's expected to run, and so is Attorney General Dave Yost, who is prosecuting all of these cases tied around House Bill Spitz.
Right. I mean, you know, a skeptic could say that Dave Yost is, you know, moving forward on this because he wants to raise his profile in advance of running for governor. You know, I think Yost has also said that he felt like the federal government was taking too long and he wanted to move forward more promptly. Certainly both things could be true.
Yes. Our third topic for this week is kind of the ongoing fighting within the Ohio House Republican Caucus. Jason Stevens has been the speaker since January of 2023, but he is still at odds with the majority of House Republicans. This week, 38 of 67 of them voted to take his authority over their campaign fund for the fall elections away and give it to State Rep. Phil Plummer to create a new entity to raise and spend caucus campaign money. And we know that you know, this is going to have an impact because Stevens is likely going to face off with current Senate President Matt Huffman for Speaker next year when Huffman moves over to the House.
Right. And I think if you read the tea leaves on this, it doesn't look good for Stevens, this particular move, because Phil Plummer is sort of in the Derek Marin camp, which Marin lost the Speaker's race to Stevens when Stevens managed to get 22 Republicans and 30-something Democrats to back him. And so, you know, there's a chance that losing control of this, of the purse strings, could, you know, weaken his power. And it could allow Plummer to, you know, maybe punish the Blue 22, the folks who supported Stevens over Marin. But we'll see.
Right. And, you know, Stevens just lost, what was it, like four incumbents in the primary to people that might be supportive of Huffman.
Right. You know, it's sort of interesting because the fight over the speakership has really been pretty robust in the last six, 8 years. We just had a lot of turmoil in the House.
Yeah. And, you know, Democrats were able to obviously to play a huge role in Stevens winning the speakership last time around.
Right. And the Democrats, of course, played a big role in Larry Householder becoming speaker.
Yeah. The biggest story out of Ohio politics this week that's getting national attention is the possibility that President Joe Biden might not make the Ohio ballot this November. I mean, I think this could be confusing to a lot of people because they're like, well, we just had the Ohio primary in March and he easily won. But this really has to do with the national party deadlines. The Democratic National Committee doesn't officially make Biden a nominee until the convention in Chicago in mid-August, and that's after Ohio's August 7 deadline to certify candidates.
Yeah, somebody should have looked at the calendar and all the requirements of all the states and made sure that they could meet those requirements. Under state law, it's a 90 days, the nominee has to be certified to the ballot 90 days ahead of the vote, which puts it at like August, I can't remember, early August, like August 6th or 8th or something like that. And the DNC doesn't meet in Chicago until like August 19th. So they missed it by 12 days. Now, this was the same problem back in 2020 because both political parties were going to meet inside that 90-day window. But they foresaw it and they changed. They got a one-time waiver change in state law to say 60 days is fine. But they didn't flag it. And so now there's this big kerfuffle about, you know, what happens. And of course, you know, there's some states that we're trying to remove Donald Trump from the ballots for various reasons. And so, you know, I don't know if Republicans are going to be, you know, really charitable about, you know, saying, okay, sure, we'll bend the rules or we'll give you a waiver or whatever. The legislature would have to act, I think, by May 9th or so in order to adjust state law and allow for that waiver.
Yeah. And the Secretary of State's office said Democrats could move their convention, but you know, there's no way that's going to happen. That's a huge undertaking. But Democrats sound optimistic Biden will make the ballot and that there may be some other ways around this.
Yeah, but they weren't real specific about it.
No, they weren't. One more thing for this week before you go. On Wednesday, Governor Mike DeWine gave his annual State of the State address. The big focus for him again this year centered around children and policies impacting families. He advocated for programs to expand mental health care access and improve literacy rates and reading in schools and support for new mothers. He also announced plans for a voucher program to make child care more affordable and spend $85 million in federal funding to upgrade and expand child care facilities. Laura, did anything else jump out to you out of the state of the state? Sounds kind of familiar to a lot of things you said
before. Oh, very much so. I mean, if past is prologue, then...
He's always talking about children a lot.
That's right. I mean, I think mental health, the environment, kids, and education, those are kind of the meat and potatoes of Mike DeWine's agenda.
And he's really pushing for the legislature to act on some kind of policy about children and cell phones and social media.
Yeah, we've heard Governor DeWine and Lieutenant Governor Houston, I think both have been talking about that and asking that kids not be allowed to have phones in schools, that they're a distraction, et cetera. So we'll see how much of his legislative agenda he manages to get through.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us this week, Laura.
Absolutely.
Ohio Politics Explained is brought to you by the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. You can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, @OhioExplained.